The Chancellor of the Exchequer will now make a budget announcement regarding transport.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Internal combustion engine cars have always paid road duty in the form of VD. But this government is committed to introducing the same for electric vehicles with the new pay-per-mile tax, or EVD. VD. VD and EVD will also be followed by a new scheme called Standard Transport Deduction, or STD. Those not eligible for STD will be awarded with Standard Transport Indemnity, or STI.
Order. I don't know what's wrong with the House today. Madam Chancellor, continue.
Well, I would, but I was about to tell the House about the Car Revenue Automotive Billing Scheme, or for short...
Hello, welcome to Gareth Jones on Speed. I'm Gareth, he's Zog.
Hello.
And there's someone a bit like Alex Goyle, though he's going to sound a little bit different. Hi Alex, how's your face?
Hello, half of my face doesn't quite work, so you saying the letter F is really cruel. Damn you, sir.
Can you say Ferrari F40 for me, please?
Ferrari F40 for me.
That's very good.
Yes, I had a little trip to the dentist to have a filling redone and some other things looked at, and they had to inject my face a lot. Problem is, the injections didn't quite take, so while my face is numb, the teeth bit didn't quite go to sleep, so there was some screaming.
Oh, really?
I've had a really great day.
Well, hey, welcome to our self-help group. We sympathise, we understand the pain and the anxiety that comes with tooth repair work. I'm very lucky, I'm very chilled about it, because when I lived in Battersea and I was working in a laboratory and working for the alarm, I had very little opportunity to sleep. And I used to go to the dental hospital and they put me in the chair and they gag my mouth open and work on me and I would... I'd just fall asleep. No anaesthetic or anything. They would just work on me. I've always been very lucky and very chilled about the dentist. How about you, Zog? Do you love the dentist?
You,
I hate the dentist.
You say, hang on, I just this is a little bit on picking. You say you just went to the dental hospital in the middle of the night and they'd work on you. But it was this as...
Not in the middle of the night,
Just for shits and giggles, he turned up and be like, hi, can I have the crown today?
Like the thing where you get free haircuts.
Not quite. It was when I had dental appointments, I would get time off my work in the laboratory. I would go there and the first thing I'd do would fall asleep. It was lovely. Are you good with dentists? You got a good dentist?
No. I would say I'm moderately bad with dentists. I really don't like having things jabbed into my gums. I don't like drilling and scraping and poking with metal implements on my teeth. I really, really don't like it. That said, unfortunately, it's kind of necessary. And the couple of times I've had sort of slightly bigger dental things in the last few years, I had to have a couple of impacted wisdom teeth out.
Ooh,
not all that long ago.
That's a big one. Yeah.
The medical staff doing the numbing or anaesthetising and ripping out of your face bit did a fantastic job. So when I had that impacted wisdom teeth thing, I went from having somebody, in a reassuring manner tell me what they were going to do, and then just waking up with no awareness that anybody had been shoving metal tools into my mouth, and yet I was a couple of teeth lighter. Did an absolutely amazing job, very painless.
I experienced that in real time with you there, Zog. Yeah. I was unconscious of it surfaced. Oh, it's over. That's a nice thing, isn't it? That's good. That's good.
I can recommend it. It's the dental hospital in Denmark Hill. Is it King's Hospital Dental? Hill, South London. Very good. Very, very good.
Right. I know Denmark Hill.
I think it's a teaching hospital.
Yeah. My dentist in London, who I've now moved from, I've known him a good number of years. Whenever I go in there, he's a massive Star Trek fan.
Excellent.
And we used to spend about 20 minutes talking about Star Trek and then probably 5 minutes doing network, and that was it. You know, it was going to be, he was really, like me, deep Trek. Deep,
I mean,
Trek.
If he doesn't have a dentist chair that's kind of made up like Kirk's command chair in the bridge, he's missing a trick.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I'd love that. That'd be very cool. Alex, welcome back to On Speed. I know you're going to struggle with some letters with your numb mouth.
OF off.
Hey! So, can we ease you back in? Because I've got an idea for this programme.
Okay.
It's called Three Wheels on My Wagon. And I thought, as I've been doing motorbike stuff quite a lot recently, before we fully return to four wheels, we should perhaps bridge it a little bit by talking about three-wheel vehicles. Now,
I know nothing about those, not at all.
Now, this is to welcome you back. You have only owned one Morgan three-wheeler, haven't you?
Yes. Currently, it's at the Menders.
Oh, still?
Yeah, well, it's winter now, so it doesn't really matter if it takes a while to fix. But yes, last I heard it was going in for paint, and I imagine they'll keep it up there until the sun comes out again.
Going into paint, what they're painting it for you. They're restoring the bodywork.
Well, it turns out when someone sort of fully bodies it with a moped, you need to bend things and unbend things, which means you need to take paint off.
I didn't realise that's what happened. Someone hit you on a moped.
Yeah, oh, sorry. For those just joining my trials and tribulations with the MOG. Yeah, I was coming back home in the summer from Goodwood, and I'd fueled it all up because I was taking my partner down to the festival for the first time ever. There's lots of letter Fs there. This is awful for me. I pulled up outside my house. I indicated right. I did a lifesaver check. Nothing there. Checked my mirror. Nothing there. Was stopped. Started moving. And then there was a moped who overtook on the wrong side of the road.
Oh, dear. Yeah.
And he embedded himself in the side of the car. And bless him, he was a little shaken up, but we got him off the road. His bike was okay, bar a bit of plastic had come off, but he bent quite a few bits of me. And he said, look, that was entirely my fault. I wasn't paying attention. I was staring at the car.
Well, bless him for being honest about it. Okay.
Wasn't staring at the indicator going, though, was
right,
he? But anyway.
It distracted from, your car is so interesting, it distracted from a flashing light. That's how, yes, we should all drive really dull cars, grey cars, and people would see what our intent is. Hey, do you love three-wheelers? You think they're a great idea, Alex, don't you?
I think they're silly, and I think they're excellent. I think their original purpose as being a cheap means of transport has sort of run its course.
Yeah. Yeah,
because cars can be cheap now. Not as cheap as perhaps they once were, but cars can be cheap. So, yeah, I think they're great. But as a thing for fun, a bit like a horse.
As a thing for fun. Zog, where are you on three-wheel cars? Are they a very silly idea?
I think I'm kind of with Alex here. They're silly and wonderful. You know, they're different. Certainly, Alex's Morgan, you know, that's a vehicle with bags of character. And, you know, it's a proper enthusiast's and possibly slightly eccentric enthusiast's vehicle. No, they're fantastic for that.
However, from an engineering and geometry point of view, not the best layout.
Maybe not. And, I mean, just on that cost thing, I mean, I guess another thing that comes into the cost side of it and, you know, three-wheelers no longer sort of being a great way of going for an entry-level vehicle cost-wise, the things that set the minimum cost of a vehicle are now different to what they were, you know, when people were first building three-wheelers. Very different.
Yeah.
You know, the regulatory and other things that set a minimum cost for what your vehicle is going to be mean that, you know, whether it's got three or four wheels, it's going to cost a certain amount that, you know, where just pulling a wheel off and simplifying another doesn't necessarily bring you down to rock bottom. But, I mean, we've got a bit of family history with three-wheelers. My uncle, years ago, I mean, we're talking 1930s, 1940s, had a Morgan three-wheeler. But back then it was definitely, you know, a cheaper option.
Right,
Also a good bit of an enthusiast option because, you know, he raced motorbikes and with a couple of his other brothers were quite mechanically minded. So I think he did a certain amount of work on it himself to maintain it. There was a broken drive shaft at one point that needed fixing.
That'll happen.
Hmm? You've heard that?
That'll happen.
Old problem. I feel generally well disposed towards three-wheelers.
There are some very cool three-wheelers. When I was a teenager and playing in a band, my mate Trevor became my roadie because his dad had a Reliant Regal 21E van that was big enough to transport my Goodman's 18-inch bass cabinet speaker in the back and my amp and my bass and me and Trevor and his dad in front. Not a word of a lie, when we used to go up the hill out of Dusworth towards Trelawnid, we all had to lean forward in case it tipped up on its back wheels. True story. And the Regal was never the coolest of three-wheelers. You could argue that the Morgan has become the coolest of three-wheelers, but at one point probably wasn't. And the coolest of all three-wheelers is, well, I've got three recommendations. One is the Bond Bug. Come on.
Mm.
Was it James Ogle who designed that? Also designed the Chopper and the Reliant Scimitar, I believe. I think that was the same.
Tom Karen,
head of Ogle Design. That was his name, damn it. Forgive me. Yeah. Tom Karen. The Bond Bug. I mean, that is innately cool, isn't it? It looks like a lump of cheese.
Oh, yes.
It is, yep.
Would you have one?
Yeah.
Yeah, for like a month.
Yeah.
And then I'd give it back because it's weird and cool.
Yeah.
But also, nah.
Yeah. You wouldn't survive any sort of impact, it being glass fibre.
No, no. Yeah. Or you'd just go under whatever you rear-ended.
You'd slice under it like a chisel. A perfect safety option.
Like one of the good robots in Robot Wars.
Hey, ow! Hey, right. I'm coming back to Robot Wars. It's funny you mentioned that, but we'll save that for later. We'll save that for a later part of the conversation. Just flagging that up now. Stitch forward, Robot Wars. Remember that.
Mm-hmm.
The coolest of all three-wheelers, there are two contenders. One is a version of a Reliant Robin that was sold for £4,200 this week online. Did it turn up in your news feeds anywhere? No?
No.
It didn't, but I'm going to guess. It wasn't one. It was used on a Top Gear stunt, maybe?
No, that would make it valuable. Yeah. Good. But you're the right sort of thinking. There is a TV connection. It has been converted and modified into being a DMC 12. Is that what it was called? The DeLorean?
DeLorean.
Yeah. DMC 12, Alex, okay. Yeah?
Yes, that was DeLorean, yeah.
Yeah.
For improved performance.
Yeah. So imagine a silver Reliant Robin that's got the DMC grill. It's not that far from the original Robin grill, if you think about it. It's got gull wings. It's got gull wing doors. But it's a pickup at the back. And it absolutely looks champion. It's
really... Okay, that last bit, I don't quite believe. It's a Reliant Robin with a DeLorean grill, yeah. Gull wing doors, yeah. And it's a pickup. Yeah. And it looks fantastic.
Yeah,
no, yeah. It doesn't. No, I don't have to look at this thing to know that it does not look fantastic. It's.
I will send you a link to the picture of it because it genuinely is cool. And I thought it would appeal to you, Alex, it being in that strange Venn diagram.
Oh, I can see it, yes. Oh, wow. That looks, that's a thing that a
see,
man
it is
has
cool.
spent time making.
Yeah, that's wonderful, isn't it? I love it. But however, that might not be the coolest three-wheeler ever, in my view. It's a car I've been fond of for a very long time, since it first appeared in 1992 or thereabouts, if I remember. I was doing How on ITV, or How 2, I should say, on children's ITV at the time, and I wanted to do a How about trikes. You know, how good is a tricycle?
Yeah.
And, you know, we all have that problem of on a tricycle going round a corner and, oh, you fall over, right? They're great, apart from cornering. Unless you create a reverse tricycle, of course, where you've got a single wheel at the back and two at the front, Alex, which changes the dynamics in every possible way, right? Every possible way. Your Morgan...
The rear wheel is driven, the front wheels do the steering.
That's all they do. Right, well, you've got the perfect layout. Well, the Grinnell Scorpion looks like a 90s version of that. It's got a fat rear tyre, and the rear transmission and the motor is a BMW K100 engine, or you can have the 750 or the 1000 or the 1100, I believe. Four-cylinder motorbike engine with a sequential gearbox. Slightly smaller rear tyre than you would have on a motorbike, of course, so the gearing is different. And it's limited to about 125 miles per hour. But the Grinnell Scorpion 3, now there are two versions. There's Grinnell Scorpion 3, which is a trike, or the Grinnell Scorpion 4, which is a four-wheel version of the same car. Cab right. forward, looks like a slipper, and the Grinnell Scorpion 4 has two wheels at the back, driven by a rear-mounted Audi TT engine.
Excellent. Yeah,
that's madness. But Grinnell, just a manufacturer of trikes, really, based near Bewdley, Worcestershire, that way, Stourbridge, that sort of way. And I remember seeing one, Zog. We were at Le Mans together in, I think, what was 2011. I looked it up today, and it was 2011.
We were at the Great British Welcome in South Saturnow. There was somebody driving one.
Yeah. A red one. I got a picture of it. They brought it all the way from the UK. I mean, great for whizzing around country lanes and circuits, but a long journey like that would have been exhausting. But I think the Grinnell Scorpion is about the coolest trike ever. I believe in that car. It's a minimum automobile. You know I love those, right? Take everything off.
It's a very, you know, exciting, high-performance dynamic package.
Yeah.
You know, you're certainly very involved when you're driving that thing.
Yeah, you'll have to be, because there's quite a lot going on all the time.
Yeah.
And it's noisy and windy.
Yeah. It's like a Caterham 7 that's been pinched at the back with a single motorcycle tyre, isn't it? At the front, you've got little mudguards over your exposed wheels and a big wing on that tiny snub nose. And there's virtually nothing behind you. It will turn on a sixpence. It will spin on a sixpence. Have you ever spun your trike, Alex?
Couldn't possibly comment, yes.
No, you haven't then. Really? Was it wet?
First time, yes. It wasn't... The first time I spun one wasn't mine. It was one of Morgan's. We were testing it on a go-kart track, and I went, I wonder what happens if...
And they found out.
Don't dip the clutch in a corner. You go in lots of directions all at once.
But if you're going to do it in somebody else's vehicle on a racetrack.
Yes, it was fun.
There you go.
But yeah, because all the weight shifts forward and just pirouettes around the motor. So you just go, wee, oh, that was fun. And then you back off you go. But yes, it has done some slipping from time to time.
And that's part of the joy of it, isn't it?
Hmm. Oh, definitely, definitely. It's great.
I remember my Lancia. You know, that Lancia was one of the most joyful cars I ever owned, because if you came flying down the A1 onto a roundabout, you'd have to brake and adjust your line as you approach the roundabout. You know, balance your line on the roundabout. Yeah. Get the exit exactly right. You were involved in the driving at every moment. The car had limitations, and that allowed you to learn how to drive.
Yeah,
you know,
and mess with it and, exploit it properly.
Yeah. I always think, I think I've said this before, everyone should at some point in their life have driven a Mini, a Morris 1000, a Volkswagen Beetle, or a Land Rover, and then a truck across London, an articulated truck, and a motorbike. Then you're a driver.
Yes. Right?
You've got to be able to do all those things. Is the trike dead, then?
I mean, yes.
Here's a quick thought.
You have to really want one.
This has only just struck me, but the more recent design of moped that has two front wheels and one
the Piaggio MP3
with
nice
right that is, you know, conceptually exactly the same as the three wheels we've been talking about, the Grinnell, Morgan, exactly the same, a single driven rear wheel, two steering only front wheels. It's just that steering system, obviously, and you know, one is bigger than the other. I'd never really thought of those little things as being, you know, kind of a little brother to a Morgan or a Grinnell Scorpion, but actually they are. Maybe more so that than they are to an actual moped,
except that you've got all the mass way above the center of the footprint, and it relies on that leaning. You know, trikes aren't really designed to lean, and these vehicles, which are really great if you're someone who gets on and off a scooter all the time, you don't want to be parking it, just get off it, stands up, it's a trike. You can lean them, and the front two wheels are able to lean and are fully articulated. It works like a motorbike because the CFG is above the base rather than down in between the wheels like a Grinnell Scorpion or a Morgan. So is the trike dead? Is there no real reason to make trikes anymore? There's no economic saving.
I mean, for fun, oh, so many F's. In the name of entertainment, yes, it is, it's entirely worth doing. because some people do want them because they're a fun way to get around. They're a bit different transport, you know, when it comes to the older stuff like the Robins, etc. People have them because they love them, because they like them, because, you know, they think they're great. And same with, you know, the Morgan ones or the various people that make three-wheelers for shits and gigs, basically. They're for people who really want them because they're a bit interesting to play with. Whereas as a means of mass transportation, no.
Yeah.
Admittedly, it's quite interesting at the minute because all the small hatchbacks are on their way out. The Focus has just gone the way the Dodo. The Fiesta went a couple of years ago. Ford, please stop naming your cars beginning with F, for goodness sake. you know, the Puma is still about.
They're still making the Falcon.
Good for them. That's not very small and economical, is it? Oh, how do you think around letters? This is fun. Oh, bugger.
And the Fusion.
There's things like Pumas and there's Kias like Niro. I think they do a petrol version of that. And the Picanto, dinky, dinky, tiny cars. Yep. You can still buy small transportation for cheap. And, you know, four-wheeled cars, quadricycles and their bigger siblings don't tend to fall over, whereas tricycles can. That is a possibility. There's more regulation around cars as well, which kind of helps.
Hey, I was in Milan a couple of weeks ago for EICMA, the motorcycle exhibition, and I spent some time in town, and I was astonished at, A, the number of Minis.
Oh, yeah.
In Milan. Oh,
proper
man.
Minis or BMW Minis?
BMW Minis. BMW okay. Minis. And, you know, all of them with the Union flag pattern in the indicators or the rear lights. Wow, okay. And
that was part of the car. The only, I believe, actually I'm going to have to look this up, but I believe, so that was the last generation Mini. But I think...
Yeah, all the Minis are there. Electric Minis, Mini Clubmans, Mini Countrymans, Mini Cunts, Mini E-Cunts, Riemann, all that. But I was very impressed at how well the Mini does in Italy, because it's a car for America, really. Right, it's a big car in Italy.
Those Union flag lights,
yeah,
they were a huge deal, except they weren't very popular in Northern Ireland.
Or Wales.
I'm just reading a story. Oh, sorry, the Republic of Ireland.
Yeah.
I am mistaken. I'm just reading a story from Belfast Live. In the Republic of Ireland, buyers have a choice of the flag or plane, and they don't have to pay for the switch. So they did have an option.
Great. Good.
But I believe Northern Ireland did have to pay to have them switched.
I'd have a Welsh Dragon embossed into mine, of course. But apart from all the Minis there, with the British flags in their rear lights, Zogida loved this. You know the Citroën Ami, the new electric... Ami, which, yeah.
Yep, cute little electric.
Well, you know, there is a Fiat version of that as well, called the Topolino, I think. Isn't it called the Topolino?
Yeah, it's the Topolino, and it comes with two types of door.
One with a bar, the other without, right?
Yeah, one's a rope.
Yeah, yeah.
And the other's a big plastic door. Yeah. The Ami buggy had a bar.
Yeah.
I had one last year.
Yeah.
The Ami buggy had a bar, which just was a bit weird and stuff fell out. Yeah, the Topolino comes with a rope or a door.
And it's surprising how different the Topolino is to the Ami. When you see it, you go, oh, it's just another Ami. But I saw some parked next to each other. I didn't get a picture, unfortunately, but parked next to each other, oh, they're noticeably different cars.
Oh, yeah.
Based on the same platform, but absolutely different-looking cars. Dozens and dozens and dozens of them. And then I rented a line bike and rode around Milan past the Basilica like it was completely normal and went to the Leonardo da Vinci Museum and looked at cars that raced at Le Mans there. Oh, man, Milan. Sorry, I've gone off topic. So, three-wheelers, boys.
Ti amo Milano, sì.
There was...
Molto bene.
There was... we talked about a couple of cars a few years ago. One that was in California that was a tandem seater, one in front of the other, two wheels at the front. I think that may have been a trike, had a single wheel at the back.
Oh, that was, so there was, there's
called?
The Van Wall. There's the Van Wall, if that's what you're thinking
of.
Was
it the Van Wall? No.
If you're thinking about a really long car from California that was sort of tandem, you're thinking of the Sazinger, and that's a four-wheel car.
Was it the Sazinger? Let me just have a look. I might be able to find it.
The CZINGR. I went to see it in its infancy.
Right.
And it's 3D printed, and it's all very clever, and it sort of uses animal structural things as inspiration for its construction.
Animal structural?
Yeah. It's like birds and shit.
Like that.
bio-inspired. Yeah.
It's very cool.
Stand by. I know which episode it was in, the one where we discussed the death of my cat, Finn. And the car, I can see it now, it was a trike. It absolutely was. The car I'm talking about is... it doesn't actually say in the picture. Oh, my God, there's no episode information. It's episode 449. Okay, if you want to look it up, there is a car on the front page of that, and I can't remember what the car was called, but it was an interesting little Californian, I think it was an EV, but it was a single at the back, two at the front. That looked the shit.
Just having a look now. Hang on.
The Electra Machina Solo. That's what it was called. The Solo Evo. Electra Machinica, I think. Machanica. Electra
Machanica.
Machanica. I would say
Mechanica.
That will do, yeah.
Mechanica.
M-E-C-C-A-N-I-C-A. The Solo.
Yeah, Mechanica, yeah. As in
it look,
mechanical.
Looks like someone has just chopped off part of your car. That was amazing. I don't know if they're still going in California, but that was one of the coolest trikes of recent times.
I think they may have lasted until 2023 and then... yeah, produced from 2018 until 2023.
Well, we have the answer. Are the days over for trikes?
There you go.
Mostly, but not exclusively. Andrea Stella, big news for McLaren Racing this week is that Ella Häkkinen will join existing McLaren F1 Academy drivers Ella Lloyd and Ella Stevens. That is correct. Is the new hiring policy just must be called Ella? Absolutely not. Although we did also consider signing Ella Fitzgerald. But during the simulator test, she insisted on scatting the racing line. Very unpredictable. Terrible for telemetry. Next, you'll be telling me that you also considered Bush baby-eyed actor Ella Purnell. Well, she turned up thinking Downforce was some kind of gritty Netflix drama she was supposed to star in. We had to let that one go. So, you're saying it's pure coincidence that you've signed three drivers with the same first name? Of course. We just believe in nurturing young talent and making it really easy for the guy who prints the team merchandise. Gareth Jones and speed! Alex,
yes.
You've been to flipping China, haven't you, recently?
Yes, I have. I went to China.
Did you see any cars that you'd not heard of before while you were there?
Thousands, and the thing is, I can't remember what they are. So
yeah,
that
yeah, that's a trouble.
It's very bizarre. I was only there for a few days. It was very cool. I was there on a BYD trip to do BYD things. More on that in a moment. On the bus on the way to the factory and to the facility we were playing at, still so many F words, goodness sake, there were loads of things I didn't recognise. There was some stuff I did. You know, there were the odd Audis and Porsches and BMWs, and there were BYDs, obviously, and there was some of the stuff that's over here now. But a lot of it, sort of microcars and all EV, or pretty much all EV. And that whole thing of when you kind of picture a Chinese city with mopeds everywhere, still the case. We're staying in Shenzhou. I wandered around of an evening once through the smog, and it was incredibly smoggy because there were no trees or very few trees. Yeah, all these mopeds were going absolutely everywhere, not making a noise.
Uh-huh.
Which was really weird. It took me a while to figure out what was wrong. It's like, what's going on here? I don't quite understand it. Oh, they're all electric.
And many will have battery swap. I saw it in
India. similar to the Mavings. So over here we have Maving motorcycles, and I interviewed those guys a few years ago. And their whole jam was essentially they went to Asia, they went to India, they went to China, they went to everywhere that has this sort of transport to see how people got around, because they wanted to have that urban mobility, but they wanted to have a British engineering take on it. So you can have your Maving with two batteries that you just hot swap, and then when you're done, pop one out and stick it on charge at work, or bring it up to your living room, have it going in the corner. And then when you want to go the next morning, just pop it back in. It's all nice and easy. Very clever.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense for people who live in urban environments. They live upstairs. They live in blocks of flats. You don't have off-street parking, even for a scooter. So to be able to pop the battery off and recharge makes perfect sense. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, urban living, the ultra metropolis that is Shenzhou. Is that where you said you were?
Yeah, Shenzhou is where we were. The thing is, it was very odd because there was the main sort of urban centre, and then we were on a bus for an hour, and there were just those sort of disparate groups of massive tower blocks. So there'd be like 10 of these blocks all put together that can theoretically house about, you know, 500 people each or whatever. And then there'd be like a quarter of a mile and then another disparate group of apartments, which could all then house other people with no sort of clear infrastructure between them. It's very, very odd. They looked completely different. They felt completely different. And then you'd go to the next one and then there'd be another one, another one, another one. And then at the end of this hour long coach journey, we get to a car factory.
Yeah. That was my impression of China when I first went there. The scale of it, it's Texas scale. And you get to
it's
the
huge.
Factory, and
it's
the factory is, what,
huge.
A mile and a half, 4 miles long, something crazy like that?
Oh, it was mad. So we were there for the e-journey or something like that. And it was essentially a big press conference where they could show off and you could drive all the cars. Though in sort of very BYD fashion, I guess, we were told, you can drive this car, you can drive that car, you'll be driving this, you'll be doing that. It's like, brilliant. Got there. Oh no, that's actually a passenger ride. You can't actually drive this. You can't drive that either. You're going to be shown this.
Oh.
Some of the cars they said we could drive, they went, oh no, actually there's too many people here, so you can't do
what?
That.
What? You invited the people.
I went as a freelancer and I had sold stories against driving some of these cars. And they were like, no, sorry, no, can't do that.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear this.
Grumpy was not the word. Mm. God bless BYD's British rep, who is a lovely human being who managed to fix it all for us and basically went, these people need to drive this because they've come half around the world. But it's very odd. On the first day, there were 100 guests. On the second day, there were 300 guests from all over the world, which was mad. One of the big highlights, though, was driving the Yangwang U9.
Yangwang.
U9.
Yes, the U9.
Is that a pickup?
So,
oh, is that the supercar?
No,
that's the super.
That's
electric
the supercar. Yeah.
Of course it is.
It's the supercar. So you might have heard about
it
because recently the Yangwang U9 Extreme became the fastest production car in the world ever, doing 500 kilometres an hour or some nonsense like that, which is quite fast.
It's quite fast, that, yeah.
They didn't give us that, probably for the best. But the BYD test facility, it's sort of kind of like car land. It's Alton Towers for cars. So they built this sand dune, which is the biggest artificial sand dune in the world. They built a dunk tank because the Yangwang U8 can be driven in water for 30 minutes. So I Captain Pugwash my way through that. But then they gave us a U9 on a track for a handful of laps. And it was absolutely mega. I mean, it's got 1,300 horsepower, just shy of.
Needs more.
Which is quite a lot. The Extreme has 3,000 horsepower.
It's not enough.
It's not enough,
yeah,
I know.
Yeah.
0-62, 2.3-ish, 186 miles an hour, quite quick. They say it'll do 280 miles. Not when you're doing 186 miles an hour, but still. You know what? It felt really, really good. It's a heavy, heavy, heavy thing. It's 2.5 tons, but the way their magical suspension works, it doesn't feel it. It's really quite pointy.
Wow.
It's a pointy car.
This isn't also the magical suspension that jumps, is it?
Yes, it can jump. It can lift a wheel, so you can drive on three wheels if you get a puncture.
There it is, the three-wheeler's back. Yep. The three-wheeler's back.
The three-wheeler's back.
It wasn't gone for long. Oh.
It can also dance.
But of course.
So at the press conference on the second day, the executive vice president, Stella Lee...
Well, it thinks it can dance, but, you know, every now and again you have to take it aside and let it know that really it's not that good.
But still,
carry on.
But yeah, the EVP, Stella Lee, who's basically BYD's god, appeared on stage in one, and she got out of it in a race suit and closed the doors with her phone, and then over her phone told it to dance to different musics and it did different jigs.
You need that
weird.
From your car, don't you? I've always thought, oh, I wish this car could dance independently.
Well, this is kind of what I left BYD thinking, because every car we drove sort of had a gimmick.
Right.
So the U8 can be driven through water, and the engineer was sat in the back of the car and he said, well, really this is for people who live in areas that flood a lot. I'm like, yeah, but if you can afford the 150 whatever it is for the car, you're probably not going to live on a floodplain, so this is purely for posturing, isn't
it? You could
it?
Move to somewhere dry. And
the Z9 GT, which is this very lovely looking GT thing, like it's a Porsche rival, basically. Shooting brake style thing.
Love it.
I get like 1,000 horsepower, but it can crab walk. So it's got motors that can counter-rotate the rear wheels. It can steer them. Say you get to a tricky corner, you can nose in and then tell the rear of the car just to counter-rotate its way round. But you can also use the rear steer to keep going in a straight line but crab left and right.
Yeah.
Now, again, BYD says on the little graphic in the instrument binnacle, it goes, well, you know, for city driving, so you can just get through a gap. But why? Why would you do that? Like, all these things have gimmicks. There was this one, I think it was a U8, that we were going to be shown going up this sand dune. And they went, oh, watch this. It's going to go all the way up. It's going to be really, really fast. I went, okay. And it went up really, really fast. And then they said, ah, it's going to do a tank turn halfway up. And it's going to come down because it can do that counter-rotatey thing. Except it went wrong. As it started going up, the rear started bouncing wildly.
Oh, no.
And then it turned round rather quickly and came down. And as it came down, it was bouncing and graunching. It hit the drone that was chasing it and then sounded like very expensive noises were happening underneath it.
Great!
And they went, oh, no, look away, look away. It's time for the drone show. It went, oh, OK, it's the middle of the day, but let's go and have a look at the drone show. And the drone show wasn't a drone show. It was this gizmo that you can buy for your BYD product that's this sort of mechanical sack that sits on the roof of the car, and you can press a button and it will open and then a drone will ascend and then it can follow you. Now, it's a very cool thing to see, but at the same time, I have heard of a boot and a window. If I wanted to launch a drone from the car, I could just stick my hand out the window rather than have this complicated mechanical thing that if it goes wrong will then trap my drone.
Yeah.
And it's the cars are good.
I remember when I think it was Mercedes and Land Rover, probably the first two, give you an image of the car on your second screen on the dash from above. And it's created by using the cameras in the doors on the front and rear doors and the boot. It's like it's shot from above, and you can. And we used to joke that,
like, you see through the bonnet.
Yeah, oh, that one as well. Yeah, we used to joke that, you know, the only way you can achieve this was you press a button, a tiny micro Graf Zeppelin floats above your vehicle and gives you that shot. Right, with a drone, you can do that. And you know why they're doing this? Because everybody thinks they are the star of their own story.
Yeah,
which everybody is online these days, and the upwardly mobile young wealthy Chinese, or wherever they buy that car, will want to seem to be making Instagram videos of it and all that. And that distinction between IRL and online life doesn't exist for very many people. They're still trying to prove their worth by doing what we do, broadcasting.
Yeah, but, you know, I understand the demand for it. Or I understand the reasoning for it for some people.
Yeah, some people, yeah.
But the cars don't need gimmicks. They're good.
They do, because we're talking about it, you and me, right now.
Yeah, but I'm saying the gimmicks are pointless bollocks, which they are.
Yeah.
Like, a Yang Wang doesn't need to jump and do a dance. If they want it to do 300 miles an hour, they can make it do that and make it the fastest car. That can be its gimmick. The car itself is good to drive.
Yeah.
The Denza, beautifully put together, looks great, feels great, is quick. Yeah. It is, from my admittedly limited experience, like, it's up there with the people they're trying to compete with. But instead, it's got to crab walk for some reason, because that'll make it stand. Why?
It'll get them noticed.
Have faith in your product to not be crap.
I mean, extra bells and whistles run the risk of, you know, being things that will be more stuff that can go wrong, be expensive to fix, be a distraction, be annoying when it's not working properly. Now, if it's just your, you know, drone or something like that, it's not a big deal if that's not working.
Yeah,
but if your gimmick involves fancy suspension and wheel alignment stuff, that, yes, can enable you to do some very clever parking in spaces that you otherwise wouldn't be able to park in, that kind of stuff, well, you know, if that goes wrong, that can leave you immobile, presumably. Yeah. So the thing is, broadly speaking, yeah, I think you're absolutely right that there's a lot of gimmick loading on a lot of Chinese vehicles to bump up the spec, to make it a much more appealing proposition.
Mm.
And if this is stuff that, you know, people really want, and a lot of it is stuff that people want, actually, a lot of those little extras, yeah, they are worth something to the buyers. But yeah, a lot of it can be unnecessary fluff.
Yes, sir. Let's build your dream together. How can I help?
I bought one of your cars the other day, the BYD CQK. Gumber, I think it's called.
Oh, that's great. And how are you enjoying building your dream?
Yeah, look,
with...
can you just stop it with all that just for a moment, right? I want to make a complaint.
Oh, I'm real sorry to hear that, sir. What is your complaint?
When I bought the car and took it home the other day, I opened the rear door for the kids to look at Daddy's new motor, and the whole of the back seat area was filled with lint and fabric particles for no apparent reason.
Oh, yes, sir. That's because you ordered the version with lots of unnecessary fluff. Alex,
yeah.
I want to follow your globe trotting a little bit further because you went to see the Abu Dhabi Autonomous Racing League event, did you, this year? Were you there?
I did. I was there for a second year on the trot. And I'll tell you what, last year, I think it's fair to say it wasn't particularly successful, was it?
They had, what, five cars, three of them crashed, some didn't qualify, one hit the wall, something like that.
It was a four-car final, I think, only one of them crossed the line, and they called the race early, which wasn't really ideal.
Yeah.
And they had a car that was sort of a demonstrator car that went up against Daniel Kvyat, and Kvyat obviously destroyed it.
We have mentioned it on the programme before, I'm sure, but just for those who don't, it's an Abu Dhabi-based autonomous racing series for cars that are based on the Honda Super Formula car.
Mm-hmm.
They are completely autonomous. The competition is between a group of teams who write code to race the other cars.
Yeah.
And it's a technology demonstrator competition, really, isn't it?
This year there was one motorsport-based team involved, an actual Super Formula team, but they didn't make it through to the final. They did the silver race, and they were really quite fast. They were very good. But yeah, this year the cars have been gently upgraded thanks to feedback from the various teams, both, you know, hardware and software wise, like the car itself, but also the hardware within the autonomous stack, which sits where the driver sits.
So what could they do on the day? Was there a 5-lap race against Daniel Kvyat? How does it work?
So what happened was, when it came to race day, so I was there for 3 days. Yeah. But when it came to race day, there was the silver event, which was a time trial, basically. So all the cars that didn't quite make it into the final had 10 minutes to get the fastest time. Fastest car wins, essentially. And then there was human versus AI, which was Daniel Kvyat versus a car set up by last year's champions, TUM, German team. And it was a showcase. It wasn't an out-and-out race. And they're very much at pains to say that because Kvyat gave it like a 10-second head start, something like that.
I think that's right.
And then went, right, I've got 10 laps to catch it. And, you know, the gap tumbled and tumbled and tumbled, but then it just sort of stayed at a second, and the car crossed the line 0.7 of a second ahead of him, which was interesting. So the gap between human and AI narrowed.
Uh-huh.
Whether he, you know, whether he let off, whether he entirely let it win...
Who's to say, yes.
But it was a showcase. But the rate at which he closed the gap this time, it was far longer. Last year, it was like a couple of laps done.
And it was no doubt exciting to watch, to see how it played out there.
Yeah, I was watching it from the pits, just looking at the big screen going, wow, this is actually really impressive.
Yeah.
The final race itself, 6 cars, first time ever, 6 all-autonomous car final. Last year's champions were on pole, and then there was an Italian team, I think, called Unimor. Yes, Polymove and Unimor. I kept getting them confused. They were first and second. The rest of the teams, the gap between them all was so big. Like, those top two cars, and then everyone else was down there. And the top two raced really well. There was a daring overtake, which, again, was quite strange to see because it was a machine deciding to give it a whirl. It knew it was faster, so it did the maths.
Great.
It made the overtake, which was great. And the race only came a cropper when the very back marker from a team called Constructor, their team names do need some work, let's be real, it was having a bit of a hard time, and it was going round a corner, and then I think it detected something coming up behind it. So rather than tuck itself away, it just went, oh, I'm going to stop, which meant the lead car, the Unimor, I think it was, saw it, but not quite in time, and sort of went to avoid, but clipped its front end and put itself into a wall.
Uh-oh.
Which meant last year's champions could take it, because they went, oh, there's an accident there, so off we go.
Exciting.
So it
Great.
Was genuinely exciting.
Great. Okay, here's your stitch back, right? Robot Wars, you mentioned Robot Wars earlier on, right?
Yes.
My big argument with Robot Wars is it wasn't Robot Wars. They were not robots. They were not autonomous, free-thinking creatures that could function a task.
No, it was remote-controlled car wars.
They were driven radio-controlled tanks, is what they were. That's well,
fair point.
And I always bugged
fair
me.
Point.
However, you could rightly call this robot wars. These are autonomous, intelligent machines making their own decisions and racing. And I love that. But what you need to do, you've nailed it, you said it. Right, what was the name of the team? That team from BMW in Munich in Germany. Toom. No, they should be called Und Driver Keller Mensch Keller or something.
Sturm und Drang or something.
Sturm und Drang!
TUM is the Technical Universität of Munich or something. They're all university teams,
yeah,
pretty much.
But they
need
names.
Needs a different name.
Yeah, like Car Killer or Race Tech Monster or Data Gatherer. They need personalities. But having said that, even though these cars don't have painted on personalities, I would have been excited about watching how that played out to see who actually wins.
Yeah.
And that's the criticism most people make of autonomous racing. If there's no drivers, I'm not interested. Mate, you've missed the point. Agreed?
Yeah.
You agree, Jock?
I'm not sure, because I'm a bit torn on this, because much as last year's race was comical and, you know, not unsatisfactory in all kinds of ways, it was fascinating to watch.
Yeah, like Chinese robot football. Oh, I love that, man. Oh, that's the funniest thing in the world. Sorry, sir.
Well, but then, you know, I don't care about football, so, you know.
I don't care about football. You haven't seen Chinese robot football. So, that's beautiful.
You're right, I haven't. I might check it out. We'll see. We'll see, whatever. But I'm interested to, you know, to see, I'm genuinely interested to see what engineers and designers can do in terms of making an autonomous racing car and how different solutions from different teams are going to stack up against each other. Yeah, you know, I want to see that. I do wonder whether once they've solved all the big problems, you know, autonomous racing is going to be incredibly boring and will simply remove from racing a lot of the stuff that I do enjoy, which has to do with, you know, the uncertainty about what's going to happen. If your autonomous racing vehicles are properly tuned up, presumably your virtual drivers are never going to make mistakes. It's going to be the same race every time, isn't it?
Alex?
I wonder.
Unlike Formula One, of course.
Well, but you see, you say that. How much worse could it get? You know,
boys, I suggest we leave it there. That's about the best conclusion you could come to. I wouldn't disagree with any of those. Well done, Alex. I actually really believe in autonomous racing. I think it's interesting, like you say, Zog, while it's in its developmental phase. You're right, it could get boring, because that's the same story as Formula One. Motorsport, the more clinical it's become, the more, not boring, but hey, that's another conversation. But for now, Alex Goy, thank you.
Bye.
Zogger, thank you. Good to see you both.
Good to see you both.
And see you for another On Speed in 2 weeks' time. Will we have a world champion in F1 then? Who knows? Who knows? We'll see. Could have a Welsh World Rally champion. See you then. Bye.
If you enjoyed this show, then please like, share and subscribe. For information on how to contact the show, see pictures, read song lyrics, follow us on social media, or to sponsor this podcast, go to garethjones.tv. Gareth Jones On Speed is made in Wales by Whiz Bang.
Gareth Jones On Speed!